Welcome to Ball Talk, Matt Aghorn and Jordan Flegel, giving you takes that are fairly legal. Big Ball Talk, bringing you guys the takes that make you quake.
Got a loaded show. We're talking about Josh Giddey today, aren't you?
Yes, Mr. Giddey himself. We'll be talking about a little bit about him and his half court heave to win the game. This is March against the Lakers.
Best March
talking about them
by far.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, Derek Queen, eat your heart out. RIP to him and your bracket. But we also have, you know, breaking news. Have you heard about this? Seen anything about this? Taylor Jenkins of the Memphis Grizzlies, head coach, fired. Very shocking move there. We're going to be leading the show off with that, as well as talking about Damian Lillard of the Milwaukee Bucks, out indefinitely with blood clots. Indiana's embarrassing beatdown of the Wizards. LeBron James versus Stephen A. And maybe some Toronto players, having some former Toronto Raptors players having issues with playing for the Raptors and being in the six. Lots to talk about here, Jordan. Before we get into it, I got two things I want to address. One, you can see what I'm wearing right now, Jordan. I'm repping the boys this summer, but really, I don't really know if I can even call them that anymore. I think opening day, you get throttled 12-2.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm out. Washing my hands.
Out on the Blue Jays.
I'm out on the Blue Jays. Fucking call it. Time of death. First inning, second batter up, solo home runs. Smell you later. I just can't do it. It's crazy because, again, I remember it wasn't that long ago, Jordan. We're not far from removed from when all four, if we're including the Toronto FC, as major Toronto sports teams, we were all like sky high. The Raptors were competing for titles. The Leafs, they were really just a regular season team and, you know, debatably still are. But, they're still the only good team left now. They're the last team standing of all those organizations, which is crazy. Blue Jays are in a bad way. Raptors are rebuilding, clearly. It's kind of sad looking back at how good we had it there for a little bit. FC, they suck now, former MLS Cup champions. It's just crazy, how far we fell. And I really do think we underappreciated that phase of Toronto sports in our lifetime because, I don't think that we'll probably ever see that again, or at least it'll be a long time till we see it.
Well, first of all, Matt, you haven't embraced the Tigers yet. I mean, you're on the Pistons train.
They're up and coming. Yeah. Shout out to Spencer Torkelson.
So consider that. Consider jumping ship there.
Went to a game at Tiger Stadium last year, man. It's very beautiful. I love it.
Yeah.
Way nicer than the fucking Sky Dome.
And cheaper food, you said, which is not
surprising. Good drinks. Yeah, no, I highly recommend it for anybody living in Ontario. If you're about 2 hours from the border, you may as well just go to Detroit.
Yeah. We definitely underappreciated it. What high school year was it when we were all out? You were there at beloved establishment Boston Pizza when Jose Bautista did that.
Yes. Producer Alex going crazy, getting the place going. I think we've talked about that on here before.
Yes, but everyone remembers where they were. The bat flip game. I think that was like 2015. I'm pretty sure
it was either 15 or 16.
Yeah, which, again, was right when the Raptors were on the come up. You said, the Leafs, nothing special, but they weren't terrible. You and I went to the Toronto FC championship parade.
Front row, man, like diehard fans.
Yeah, Michael Bradley, showed him out. But
Jose, what was his name?
Josie Altidore.
That's it. I was going to say, I miss him, man. That guy had swagger.
Game-winning goal. Yeah, he was awesome. Mm-hmm.
The six is on a wave. That's all I can say.
So yeah, Toronto sports, it's not been great. I am holding out hopes for the Leafs. The Leafs this year. Again, I'm not gonna say anything until something actually happens here down the line. But we'll see what happens with those guys. It's not. It's not fun. It's not good. It's not been great. And I don't really see the light at the end of the tunnel yet. But you know what, Matt? You know what you have to remember as well. Just as much as how we underappreciated the good times, we have to remind. I have to remind myself and remind other people who bandwagoned, specifically the Raptors fans and Blue Jays fans. I mean, I'll even count myself in that. I mean, I'm a pretty casual baseball watcher, but I jumped on the bandwagon those years. But you have to go through the shitty times. The real, like, down the dumps. And the longer it is, the sweeter it is when you get back to the top. So we just got to remind ourselves of that. This is one of those times. This is back when the Raptors, 2011, when Andrea Bargnani was trailing missing threes and,
The GOAT.
Jose Calderon was, you know, sort of the greatest hope. Yeah, for real. So, you know, all these bad things are leading up to good things, but I don't know when that's going to come. We might be 80 mm-hmm. or something.
Well, again, I've said it before. I'll say it again. I thought the Raptors would win the championship and I would die. And I'd be like 95 years old. So the fact it happened when I was like 21 or something, life has just been just kind of a void ever since then. But
now we have a taste. I'm not satisfied now. Yes, I need it exactly. again.
Mm-hmm. The last thing that I want to say, I want to shout out comebacks. I want to shout out people who or things that you forget exist, and it turns out that they still are around, and it's like, oh, I thought we just kind of left you gone into oblivion, but here you are still doing your thing.
Like Donald Trump? Is that you going to shout out?
I was going to shout out our old friend, loyal friend of the program, Referee Ken from the Blue Water Athletic Association. Still doing it, man. No idea how.
That's inspiring.
Big Sasquatch motherfucker. He's calling techs in grade 7 girls basketball. The guy will never go. He'll never stop.
No, I think he has at least one hip replaced. Yes. You know, a knee issue.
I've seen him blow one out, yeah.
He's still waddling up and down the court, this referee we're talking about, reffed us in high school. Bit of a crazy refereeing style. On multiple occasions, yes. He would call it like a travel on me or something. I'm like, that's not a travel, Ken. And he's like, I know, I just don't like that move. So, you know, that's mm-hmm. where we're at. You know,
text for bad haircuts.
Yes. So, but yeah, you're right. Shout him out. He's been doing it for decades at this point.
Too long.
Yeah. Definitely time to hang it up.
Yeah. Crazy guy. But I think there's lots we can take away from that there, you know, there are some things in life will just keep on going till the bitter end. And it seems like old referees, I'm sure everyone's got one in their respective sports that they played or participated in, that just will never die. They'll always stay around. Their spirit lingers on even while they're alive. But moving on. Let's talk some NBA basketball here, Jordan. Shocking move here by the Memphis Grizzlies, canning Taylor Jenkins. You know, we're 10 games removed from the beginning of the NBA postseason, and already the Grizzlies are kind of waving the white flag on the season, in my opinion. You know, we just talked about them in the last show. You know, they have been trailing a little bit here. You know, they've been a 500 ball club for a lot of, you know, the last couple months of basketball, but still a top 5 seed here in the Western Conference, you know, kind of jockeying here with the Lakers for that 4 seed. But it's just insane to me. You know, you have this coach who's been loyal to your fan base, loyal to your organization. You have a winning record under him, you know, multiple seasons with tons of injuries, and you know, he really built up this entire culture, like was there from the beginning of Ja Morant, there in the beginning essentially of Jaren Jackson Jr. Like this entire organization and the way that this franchise has kind of shaped in the, you know, the post grindhouse years has been through Taylor Jenkins. And now all of a sudden, like they don't even let him finish out the year, which again, to his credit, I think most people would still say, you know, while right now things are a little up in the air, like you have a 60% win percentage, it's still a super successful season as a whole. So it's just a very shocking move for a team that's firmly in the Western Conference playoff picture that, you know, potentially if they could get hot and stay healthy, you know, maybe can be a dark horse title contender, depending on who you're talking to. But I am just, a little taken aback by this move. And, you know, nothing else has come out specifics of why he was relieved. You know, the official messages and everything put out by the Grizzlies seem to make it seem like it's an amicable deal and breakup, and that, you know, they appreciate everything he did. But like, there obviously something had to have just happened recently between him and the ownership, or him and some players. Like something has gone on that is going to come out, and you know, maybe will have come out by the time you're listening to this that we're unaware of at this point. But right now, there's no real sources or information on why this move happened. And I really think that, you're going to have your now assistant coach, you know, come in here as the interim coach. And I don't think this is going to resonate well with the team. I don't think this is going to do them any favors down the stretch of the season. And, you know, especially in the playoffs, I think you can kind of essentially write off the Grizzlies first round at this point.
I still think that they've got a chance, maybe if they can sort of coalesce and come together as a team and like we just talked about the Grizzlies last podcast, it's all going to be about health with them. Just sort of for the on-court product. But I mean, I think I agree that, yeah, that's, it feels like this is just not going to be their year. If something like this happens, like you say, 10 days, like a couple weeks before, or 10 games or a couple weeks before the end of the regular season, like,
yeah,
it would be one thing if they waited to the off season and then let Taylor Jenkins go. I would have still been surprised no matter what happened this year, like no matter what happened in the playoffs, they could have got swept in the first round. I still honestly would have been a bit surprised because, like you said, he's been so great for establishing the winning culture there. Like he was second in Coach of the Year voting a couple years ago since he took over. I think it was 2019. I believe
he was in the top five, top four in betting odds for Coach of the Year. If you want to take that into consideration.
Yeah, yeah. And aside from last year when they were just decimated from injuries, like they've played way above their head, like in terms of a pretty young team, a lot of that time, not too many vets on there. And, you know, everyone has developed. Like you, if you look at Jaren Jackson Jr., like he's come in and gotten better every year. Like John Morant has added a lot to his game. Desmond Bane has become a much better player over the years. So like, I just, If he had been let go in the offseason, I would have been a little like, okay, maybe whatever. Like, it was kind of surprising to me, but maybe there was some stuff going on. The fact that I have never heard of a coach getting fired at this time. March 28th, the end of March. I have never in my life, unless you're on a losing team, if you're on like a team that's clearly out of the playoff picture and you just want to, you know, move on from them. I have never seen a team in the playoffs or even in playoff contention let go of their coach at this time. So like, there has got to be something else that we don't know. Something like you said, maybe he slept with someone's wife there, in the front office or the ownership group. Who knows? Or it could have been a blow up with players. If we're going down the like route of like, okay, maybe he's lost the locker room or lost the belief of the team's best player, which is John Morant. And that's kind of who instigated this whole thing. First of all, like, I would be careful about doing that if I was the organization. If John Morant was saying, like, I want Taylor Jenkins gone, I don't know. Like, to be honest, Ja, if I can be, like, perfectly frank, like, Taylor Jenkins has probably done more for, like, establishing a winning culture here than you have, based on the amount of time that you've missed with injury, obviously the off-court stuff. Like, I understand you've got to keep players like that happy, and your franchise cornerstones, you got to sort of, keep them content, and wanting to stay with your organization. But if that was what the thing was, I would be kind of worried that they kind of jumped the gun here. But again, like there's no indication that that's what was happening. Like through all this time, I've never heard any rumblings at all that like John Morant was dissatisfied with the coaching staff
or anybody really. I feel like they've always been a pretty good, like a pretty synergetic squad, like as a whole, very cohesive.
You have to be if you're winning the amount of regular season games that they win. And then so like the other sort of road to go down, or road of inquiry, is like, okay, are people is the organization just unhappy with his coaching, which again just doesn't make sense, because from a regular season perspective, I think most people would agree, like he's gotten more out of this team than could have been expected going into 100%. Any of these seasons.
Gigi Jackson, Vince Williams, Santi Aldama, like they're solid players, but I don't think that a lot of probably 80% of other NBA coaches probably get as much out of those guys as he does.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, okay, is it that you are fine, like you acknowledge what he does during the regular season, but you don't like this guy who plays like this deep 10-man rotation going into the playoffs? It's like, well, I'm pretty sure if you gave him a more, like we just talked about Memphis last week again, and I said they're still in need of a consolidation trade to be more of a threat come playoff time, because the reason Taylor Jenkins is playing these 10-man rotations is because that's the best way to sort of get fresh legs out there and win these games. Like if he had less sort of valuable players at the bottom of his rotation and had more sort of star and veteran talent at the top end, I'm sure that would switch. Like he's a good coach. So like, I just, no matter what the reasoning that we can sort of speculate that it is, just doesn't make sense to me. So it's gotta be something that's going to come out here in the next week or two, or maybe even in the coming days, about some thing other than basketball, because otherwise this just makes no sense to me. And even if it was a basketball reason, why are you throwing this amount of uncertainty and craziness into this team right now?
Yeah.
Right before a playoff run. Like, it just doesn't make sense to punt it like this. Like, they saw how bad a season can go last year. Like you said, they're 44-29 right now. Like, if they were in the East, they could easily overtake New York and be the third seed. Like, they're having a really, really good season.
So. I mean, they're not that far off from the third seed, even in the Western Conference, if they could pull things together. Like, they could catch up to the Nuggets, one and a half games.
Yeah, so it's like, I do not understand how... the Grizzlies organization thinks that they can just do this and if there's no other crazy reason like that people will just accept it. Like, this is just this is one of the craziest firings I can remember happening. We'll have to wait and see. But something smells fishy here for sure.
Like, this is kind of like a combination. Like, I think the only other two firings of recent memory that I can think of where this has ever happened, like, if you're talking about the kind of a funny time of the season, like Dwayne Casey gets, rookie of the year, coach of the year, pardon me, with the Raptors, and they fire him.
That's in the off season. That's after the season.
And exactly. At least they ran it out, played it out, gave him that chance, whatever. It made sense that everything went down the way it did. Still, kind of awkward to win coach of the year when you didn't have a job after, but and then he goes to the Pistons. That worked out well. Sorry, Dwayne. And then the only other one I can think of, and again, at least this was super early on in the year, was Adrian Griffin with the Bucks last year.
Yep.
And that one was, again, that was kind of Giannis and some of the other core guys didn't like the way that he was trying to change up the defense and how they were running the team, which I still think is hilarious. It's like, well, you brought in a new fucking coach, that's what's gonna happen. You don't just play the exact same style forever. That's not important anymore, since Adrian Griffin, as far as I know, has no inklings of getting another head coaching job. But they were like 20 games above 500 at that point, super early on in the year. At least in that case, they were doing it early enough that they could rally and they could recoup everything and they could get together and they could kind of galvanize around their new head coach. This one just... Yeah, now, like, you still have a familiar face, but it is going to be different. Having that, alpha voice in the locker room, that guy in charge on the bench, like, the rotations, just knowing to make those calls, like, that is a hard thing to adjust to for the new head coach as well. Like, it's not an easy job to have by any means, even if you are already familiar with the team, the personnel, and everything else in between with that. So it's an interesting one, and the assistant that's getting that is Tomas. Pardon me if I butcher your last name, Lisalo, Finnish player here. So who knows? Maybe they're making a run for Lauri Markkanen in the offseason. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
It's going to be a big big step up in his role and his duties. And I don't know if that means, like, I don't know if he'll stay as the bench leader here coming into next season. But a very surprising move here by the Memphis Grizzlies. And we'll see if come Monday we've got some more details to break down.
Yeah. Would love to know what the hell went on, because, like, John Tortorella just got fired, didn't he? I mean, like, that.
Yeah, but he kind of makes sense. It was like the day before, too. He was like, I fucking hate coaching shitty teams.
Yeah, right. So it's like, it's, hockey season and NBA season are somewhat, around the same time. And it's like that makes sense, because we can clearly trace something that happened. Like, I even look back at the last game, like Memphis's last game, they lost to OKC. And I was trying to, like, see if anything happened within that game that would sort of explain this. But, nothing that I could see. And it's like, if you're going to fire a coach at this point in the season, it has to be some sort of crazy thing. And so whatever this crazy thing was has happened behind closed doors, and there's been no whisperings about it at all. Like, this was like... the Luka Doncic trade, like, on a coaching level, like, no one, I hadn't heard this at all. And if you told me which coaches in the NBA are least likely to be fired, he would be right up there with, almost anybody, because,
I missed the Shams notification. I just saw your text and I was like, what? That doesn't make any fucking sense.
I know. So yeah, it's crazy. We'll see what comes out, but, like, right now, if things hold, LA and Memphis in the first round, like, if you're going up there without Taylor Jenkins, who, again, has gotten to know how these rotations work and who plays well with what and sort of what to do, and has that coaching, experience in the playoffs. Like, I know who their assistant they're promoting, knows all that information, I guess, technically too, being around the team all year. Like, it's a different animal when you've got to take on all that responsibility and you're going up against someone like, you know, NBA minds, like Luka and LeBron and JJ Redick on the sidelines. Like, that's a huge disadvantage that you now have. And yeah, it's just crazy. It feels like such a counterproductive move. Cause the other thing too, I mean, you mentioned it as well. Like, Memphis has not been doing great the last little bit. They've been dealing with injuries. Ja has been in and out. They just haven't looked that inspired basically since like the All-Star break. And it's like, so you're firing your coach to make that better? Like, do you think that's going to improve things? It's crazy. So yeah, we're going to have to wait to see what really went on here behind the scenes.
Well, moving on, Jordan, to from sad news to potentially, you know, even sadder news, especially if you're a Bucks fan, but All-Star point guard Damian Lillard out indefinitely with a blood clotting issue, the same issue that put Victor Wembanyama out for the rest of this season earlier on this year. I'm no doctor, deep vein thrombosis in his right calf, which you know, also for DVD. People who, you know, have been around for a while, they can remember this was what put Chris Bosh's career to a permanent end. This is just brutal news for, you know, basketball fans as a whole. I mean, whatever your opinions are of him or the Bucks, Damian Lillard has been one of the best and most exciting talents that we've had for the past, you know, 15 years. So it is shitty to not have him on the court, especially in the playoffs when, you know, the East is still somewhat wide open and the Bucks were kind of trying to jockey for one of those top spots. But, you know, they're going to be in the top six still. But, man, we've talked about this Bucks team and how lackluster they've been and how the Giannis and Dame pairing has ultimately kind of been a failure throughout this, in the, you know, the last two seasons. And this is kind of the last nail in the coffin to me, man, for this pairing. You know, hopefully Dame is all right and, you know, he'll bounce back and he'll be ready to play next season. But Bucks, it's time to pack it in, man. Hit the rebuild button. You're done. You have no prospects on the come up that are any enticing. Like fucking Kyle Kuzma's on your team. That's a bad sign. You're relying on Brooke Lopez, who is getting older. Giannis cannot be happy. You know, he's been in and out of the lineup as well this season with little knick-knack injuries. And you know, his you know, he's said it himself. If he doesn't think that the team is going to be winning and that there's a chance to compete for a championship, he doesn't really have any interest in being there. And I look ahead to next season and even this year. Like, I don't think anybody's looking at this team. You know, Giannis, yeah, you're one of the top three best players in the world right now. But I don't think that anybody is giving the Bucks any kind of clout as a legitimate title contender this season. And I think that if we live in an age where Luka Doncic can be traded midseason. I think an offseason Giannis Antetokounmpo trade has never been more of a reality than it is right now.
Yeah, and I mean, Matt, is that not the best thing for the Milwaukee organization to do?
Giannis is
30, okay? So you're looking at him in the last few years, and the last few playoffs specifically, the injury concerns that he's dealt with that have kept him off the court. Like, you know, it's not just everything around him that's kind of falling apart. His body clearly has been taking a beating because so much has been on him during the regular seasons. You know, it's kind of like a lesser, you know, Embiid situation. Are we still shunning that guy? But probably number 21.
Yeah, he's dead.
It doesn't really matter. We've kind of shunned him as an NBA community anyway, so we don't really need to do it.
It's crazy that nobody won the MVP in 2023.
Yes. But like, it's just, you know, sneakily Giannis has, you know, been sort of seemingly breaking down a little bit, like not to any sort of crazy extent. Like you said, still one of the greatest players on the planet, still has a lot left in the tank. But I just think it's clear that if you're the Bucks and you want to get any value for Giannis, you know, via trade, I would sell high now. I would sell high at a time when you've clearly and genuinely, you can look yourself in the mirror and you say you've tried everything around of him. You went and you traded for Dame. You've given it a couple years now. It's clearly not going to happen. If Dame's not playing in the playoffs, the Bucks have no chance. No chance.
No.
Because not only, like, you know, let's say last year, it's like, okay, if we were to not have Dame, Maybe we could sort of envision back to the championship run when we had Chris Middleton, if we could get him back. And then we have Giannis and Brooke. Like, Chris Middleton is now officially gone. Like you said, are you going to go in, roll into the playoffs with a big two of Giannis and Kyle Kuzma and expect to do anything? And again, Brooke Lopez, he's been great, done a great job revitalizing his career in the last 5 years. He's old at this point. He's not doing too much beyond.
Well, he's what, 35, 36?
Yeah, yeah. He's up there. So it's like you can't rely on him like you used to be able to. And so, yeah, it's over. It's over for the Bucks. And frankly, even before Dame went down, I think everyone thought it's over for these guys. Like, they're just not deep enough, not good enough, not athletic enough outside of Giannis. So that's it. So, like, it has to be that the path forward has to be for the Bucks that they trade Giannis in the offseason, try and, like, because a team would still give you a decent amount of stuff for Giannis at this point. Like,
I mean, he's under contract for a guaranteed 2 more years. Yeah, max salary cap hit, $55 million essentially over the next 2 seasons. But I mean, like, for Giannis, you'll take that.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you're at a point where it's like, okay, you can actually, and this is the rare situation where both sides will be better off. You can split amicably when Giannis comes back. Yeah, he'll get a huge fucking ovation. He'll get the video tribute, everything. Brought the fucking franchise their first championship since fucking Kareem. So it's like, this would be totally fine, I think, for both sides if they split. And the worst thing you can do is to stubbornly hold on to him while his value kind of steadily and very slowly over time goes down to the point where he's not happy. You're not happy because you have no good trade for him. Like, we've seen this time and time again with sort of aging stars. And so I really want Milwaukee to do this, because also from the fan perspective, wouldn't it be fucking awesome to see Giannis play with like a whole new cast of characters? Like just with, a new front court partners, new back court partners. Like, he's been on the Bucks. Like, when was the last time we saw someone at his level, multiple MVP winner, stay on the same team this long? Like, it's him and Steph. That's basically it. And then you're going back to Kobe, and like, it's the norm now to sort of move around. And as we kind of have complained about that in certain situations, when it reaches this point, and you know, it's the same thing I actually felt about Dame when he finally got out of Portland. Like, I thought
we were begging.
Yeah, I thought that was a year or two too late. Like, if he had left a few years before and joined, the Bucks or any other team, Miami. He would have still had those sort of years at a high level to play, and who knows, would have been able to actually compete for a championship in a real way. And we know, everyone knows Giannis, how competitive he is and that he wants to win again. And I'm just pleading with the Bucks not to wait too long, hold on to him, to the point where he just can't sort of play at that level anymore. So, I just think it makes sense for both sides, move on. Whether that's going to happen, I'd still say it's pretty unlikely, because depending on the haul you get back for him, you might be entering a bit of a sort of rebuilding, if not, at least like a retooling era. And do you want to put the Milwaukee fans through that? That's going to be a question they got to ask themselves. But like, that's still better than dragging this out, getting no value for Giannis, and then just being in this sort of miserable middle ground. So, God, I hope they do something, but I don't know.
Well, I 100% agree with you pretty much with all of that, and I think that when we talk about Giannis, like I mentioned there, that he's under contract for the next 2 years. He has a player option in the last year of this deal, so that would get you to the 2027-28 year. Probably opts into it. It's $62 million. I don't know if he's gonna. Like, he could go and probably fetch another one, another max contract if he wanted to opt out. But still, you trade for him now, you get 2 more years guaranteed to Giannis. And I think for a player like Giannis, like, this is the kind of guy you do want to trade at this point if your team's not competing. And you do want to kind of just invest in, like, on his last – this is the last big contract that I think he will live up to the price tag of it. I think he'll probably get another max year, 5-year deal after all this. And it won't be worth it. It'll end up being, one of those ones that'll eat into your salary, and you kind of go, fuck, like, this was a bad signing. Because his game is 100% predicated on his ability to just out-muscle and be a freak athlete and, just do everything on the court that no one else can match physically. That's not going to translate to, your game when you're 33, 34, 35, 36 years old. Like, He has no post game, pretty much. Like it's essentially non-existent. No jumper anywhere on the court, especially not from three. So like when he eventually does kind of take that step back, and again, all these injuries that have been piling up over the last couple seasons, like that is the sign that, you know, exactly. his body is starting to regress. Once that happens, it's done. It's wraps for Giannis. One of the best players we've ever seen. Like, you know, top. I would probably put him in the top 50. We've talked about him. Like, you could argue he's the greatest power forward to ever play in the NBA, and that's a hell of an accolade to have from a kid from the streets of Greece. So I don't think that, you know, there's no shame in this, but if we're being like real about this whole situation, like Giannis, like in the Bucks, need to decide. Like, they need to just punt the rest of this era and just make up whatever losses. Because even let's say we're wrong, and Giannis does play till he's 38, and he's a freak all the way through, and whatever. Yeah. You're still probably going to get multiple first-round picks, maybe an all-star player, maybe a highly touted prospect. Like, you will get a haul for Giannis at this point in his career still. So I don't know why you wouldn't do it. It's going to be an interesting thing to, you know, monitor. And, you know, obviously this kind of discussion started with Dame, so I feel like it's important we should touch on him as well and his future, because he's not getting any younger, obviously. And, you know, I think after something like this, like, with Wembanyama, it's totally different because he is, you know, only about 20 years old. Like, he's going to be able to have time to bounce back from this. The Spurs shut him down super early, so he's got tons of time to, you know, recoup it. And they've got all the medical staff out there doing what they can to keep him, you know, healthy and happy and you know, ready to progress for next season. I'm not worried about him. But you look at Damian Lillard. He's 35 years old. Like, this is kind of the twilight of his career. He's only got one more year on his current contract, if you're not including his player option in 2026, 2027. And even then, again, we're talking about a $55 million, $56 million cap hit onto your salary cap. Like, not only are the Bucks like not going to win games with this version of Damian Lillard, who, again, has still been an all-star level type of player, but like, we're kidding ourselves if we think this is the kind of guy who can drag a, you know, a subpar roster to the conference finals like he used to do in the Western Conference with the Trailblazers. Like, it's just not going to fucking happen. So, again, this is another guy you kind of have to trade, but his stock has to be at an all-time low at this point. Like, I don't know if people are going to want to gamble on a guy who has, you know, a serious, like, you know, potentially life-threatening issue if it's not traded. And a guy who is older and has a huge salary cap hit. Like, unless you are just completely ready to just go all in for an NBA championship, then you can't really afford to trade Damian Lillard. And unfortunately, that's the reality of where Dame is in 2025, going into 2026. So, I mean, Jordan, like, what do you think the value of a Damian Lillard is going down the line of the rest of his career here? Because, yeah, he can't have all that much left.
Yeah, I mean, this is something, again, that we've seen time and time again. You can't really trade a guy like that at this point with the, you know, with the age, with the injury concerns he's had. I mean, even before this blood clotting issue, which, again, knock on wood, he can come back and play at all. I mean, look at Chris Bosh, like you said when you first talked about it, like that completely. And he was only around, Chris Bosh wasn't that old when he was sort of
early 30s, I think, still.
Yeah, like around Dame's age now. So like we can't take anything for granted that he's going to come back and play at all, let alone you know, at the all-star level that he's been at. And yeah, it's just like it's really tough. I actually feel bad for players when they're in you know, Dame's shoes here, where it's like, okay, he's come to a pretty brand new organization, spent his entire career before that with the Trailblazers, and now it's like the future of his running mate is kind of unclear, or at least it should be, you know, when you listen to people like us, like is if Giannis gets traded, what does Dame mean? Because what does this mean for Dame? Because if Giannis gets traded and the Bucks move to more of like a rebuilding type thing, it's like, yeah, maybe Dame does get, traded himself as well, but maybe you have to incentivize someone to take him, for God's sake, or maybe you send him to a team that's not even trying to win, just sort of wants to absorb the salary, you know, and get a draft pick along with it. And then it's like, he's not like, I don't like Dame's chances for being necessarily sent to a winning situation. Like, you're not always going to get the, you know, Mike Conley, you know, trade where he leaves the Grizzlies and ends up on Minnesota with, you know, like a young team. Like, that's not guaranteed for Dame. So yeah, I, in terms of his value going forward, I don't think it's, you know, very much. It's not going to rise, I don't think. And unless he can come back from this next year and sort of show that, yeah, he can get back to a level where he's you know, at a high level offensively. You know, it's just very uncertain. And I'm thinking back to like what could have happened from that, you know, him finally, the writing being on the wall that he needs to leave Portland. And it's like, what if he did go to Miami? Does that change things with Jimmy Butler? Do the Heat sort of fork over the cash that Jimmy wants? Is that team sort of better set up for the future? I would say maybe, because at least you have Bam there, which is, you know, someone on the right side of 30, at least for now, and sort of a more youthful sort of group around there. And to be honest, a front office that's better at finding gems like the Jaime Hawkinses and, you know, Jovic's and stuff. Like, Milwaukee's just done an awful job of filling this team with any sort of young talent. So
you tell me you don't like AJ Green?
He's great.
He's a hell of a wide receiver on the Bengals.
But it's just, yeah, I don't know what Dame's future holds. And, you know, it that extends out to Milwaukee's as well. Like, I foresee them having to break up this team, and I would really hate to see, you know, a repeat of what fucking happened. I mean, look what just happened to Chris Middleton. You know, years of service. He clearly just, you know, his body just kind of hit a wall. They determined he's never going to get back to what he was at. And now he's over in fucking Washington, having 162 dropped on his head. And so, yeah, I really hope it's not, that's not how it turns out for Dame, but that's as much of a possibility in my head as him for sort of competing for a championship somehow on another team. Mm-hmm. Like, it's tough when you're at that age and you make that much money and you have this sort of pedigree that sort of it's happened to my guy, Chris Paul, as well, sort of in the latter years, more recently in his career. It's like when you've been such a good player and you're not at that level anymore, but you're still being paid what you feel you deserve, which is true. Like these guys have these sort of, you know, these things built into the CBA where after their 10 years of service, that's when they get a big chunk of their money. But it just doesn't make sense in a lot of these cases for teams to sort of, you know, have a player like that on a championship level squad. So it's tough. We'll see. But bottom line is I hope he can come back at all and sort of play Dame Lillard, you know, Dame time basketball again, because that's better for the league. And I just hope we can see that at least for a little bit more.
Well, you know, we're going to shout out our sincerest, you know, get well soons to Damian Lillard. Yeah. Hopefully we see him in the playoffs. But from everything we're hearing, it looks like the Bucks are going to be going on without him into the postseason, yeah. Which like we said with the Grizzlies, you might as well just wave the white flag. Don't give them too much of a chance against you know, the Celtics or the Knicks, depending on who finishes with that number three seed. So I mean, Cleveland probably won't drop. I wouldn't think.
Well, yeah.
I mean, unless the Bucks like somehow just completely fall off and like the Hawks can catch them, or or maybe even the team we're about to talk about right here, the Chicago Bulls, who are coming off of a Wednesday night thriller here against the Los Angeles Lakers. They were down 5 here, Jordan, going into like 10 seconds left in that game. They end up hitting the big three to, I believe it was Pat Williams in the corner. They get the steal. Yep. Kobe White hits a three to put them up by one. Austin Reeves, inbound play from Luka, just cuts right to the rim, which is, it's just crazy. Austin Reeves has become the closer. And it's the same play. They did the same thing on Christmas Day, I believe it was, against the Warriors. Yes. Clear out on the side inbound for to Austin Reeves, and he just goes right up to the rack and finishes on the with the guy on his hip. But even without no timeouts, Josh Giddey heaves it from half court, nothing but net, and beats the Lakers in front of their home crowd. I know it doesn't mean much. They're still the 9 seed. They're still, you know, 33-40 in the, you know, the Eastern Conference. But don't look now, Jordan. The vibes have never been higher in the Bulls season than they are right now. 8-2 in their last 10 games. They're riding on a 4-game win streak here. They have a chance to potentially get back into the top 7/8. And then who knows, man? I don't give them any chance in the playoffs. But just to not be in the 9-10 side of the play-in bracket, I do think feels a lot better. Because at least when you're in the 7 and 8, you at least feel like you deserve to be in there. I think when you're in the 9-10 slot, you kind of are looked at as like a charity case in some ways. Like if you're going to go from the 10 seed to the 8 seed, it is kind of like, it's not luck. You still had to get your wins to get there. But, you know, for us traditionalists, as old heads, you know, that grew up with the 1 through 8 seed, it's not the same, in my opinion. No. It just doesn't feel as earned. But this team, you know, I was saying when we came into this, you know, they're kind of an interesting situation. They've got a lot of young talent. Unfortunately, a bit of a logjam there at the guard position. But, you know, Bezuelas, while he's a horrible dunker, he's been solid as of late, you know, putting forth a solid second half to his rookie campaign. Kobe White has continued to be, you know, a borderline kind of all-star talent with this team, you know, averaging 20 points per game this season. Vucevic, still holding it down, solid stretch five. Definitely not the dominant big man we used to see back in Orlando, but, you know, he's doing his thing. He's all right. But Josh Giddey, we look back on it, Jordan. Obviously, you know, he had the big performance here, the big shot to win it against the Lakers. But, you know, we talked about it. Yes, and the steal.
The steal on LeBron, that inbound. Yep.
Yeah, but I think we do have to kind of talk about it a little bit, like, you know, revisiting, you know, when it happened, when the Thunder said that, you know, they needed to improve on defense, they didn't really have a need for Josh Giddey anymore, and they made that trade for Alex Caruso, one for one. And people thought that that was an absolute steal for the Thunder. A lot of people said that, you know, Alex Caruso, way better than Giddey, way more of a, you know, a hot trade asset, especially when, you know, you consider the Bulls, apparently, you know, teams were throwing 2-3 first-round picks at them for Caruso's talents. When you look at how they've contributed to each team this season, obviously totally different roles, but I will say this, and I think I said it back then, you can go back and run the tapes, but I said I didn't think it was that unfair of a trade because Josh Giddey is, like, people forget, he is super young still. Like, he is, he's only 22 years old. He's 6'8". He can pretty much play 1 through 3. You know, I think that may be even a bit of a knock. Like, he's a guard, but he's kind of got the build of a forward, but he's a little too skinny, not athletic enough to really be a consistent three. So, you know, he kind of wanders, but, like, he's averaging 14, 7 assists and pretty much 8 rebounds, 7.8 rebounds per game. And he's shooting 47 from the floor, 38 from three. I don't know what more you kind of want from a guy like that. Like, I really still believe that you can build around Josh Giddey with this team. I think you need to make a lot of moves. You got to find some guys to pair with him. I think that there's, you know, this squad still is just a random jumbled assembly of talent that they've been able to acquire. But, like, again, the numbers are good. He's shown he can play in big moments. Last thing I'll say before I pass to you, man, history of Chicago Bulls organization since Michael Jordan and before Michael Jordan, only guys to ever have 5 triple-doubles in a season, MJ and Josh Giddey. So I'm just saying, he is, I think he's a legit talent. I think he's got, you know, maybe one day, I think he will make an all-star game at some point in his career. I'm not saying that he's going to be this, like, NBA championship winning, you know, superstar, but I do think that there still should be a lot more stock put in Josh Giddey, and I think that they've got some pieces here they can pair with him nicely, and, you know, they can be competitive. I think they can get into the Eastern Conference playoffs as the play-in tournament stands, you know, playing against either the Heat, the Bulls, the Heat, the Magic, or the Hawks. I really do think they've got at least a chance to get into the top 8.
Yeah, 100%. Like, with the way they're playing, like, they are pointing upwards, you know, and we'll see. You know, the Magic season, this back half has been kind of weird. You know, guys have been in and out. And, well, yeah, it's, you know,
they scored 90 points in the last game. They got throttled.
Yeah. Yeah. And Paolo just has not looked the same since he unfortunately went down after fucking 5 games at the beginning of the season when he looked incredible. Mm-hmm. Hasn't quite, you know, and they're obviously missing Suggs as well. Like, they just, again, don't have the offense. It's the exact same issue that they had last year. The Hawks will see what they're doing. Because after they made the DeAndre Hunter trade, I was almost unsure what direction the Hawks were even going to go in. Like, were they going to kind of sneak tank here or were they going to try and win? You know, they're obviously holding on to that 7 seed. But, like, yeah, the Bulls have more momentum than both of those two teams. We just talked about the Bucks. They could... Who knows what could happen with the Bucks, depending on, you know, how these last 10 or so games go. You know, I they're not going to fall completely out, but the Bulls could fall somewhere in that mix. And then, like, you know, just generally them as a team, they shoot a lot of threes. Like, they are, they play a style that's almost like how the Celtics, you know, search out threes every time down the court. And so they can actually, I could see them definitely in a play-in context. I could see them getting hot and beating any of these, you know, 7 through 10 teams that they're in there with and advancing to the playoffs. And then if you're playing,
if Andrew Wiggins lets them, he might score 55. Yeah,
true, true. But if you're playing against the Cavs and the Celtics, like, obviously, you know, I'm not picking, the Bulls to beat either of those teams, but like I could see them at home, you know, with that crowd behind them winning a game or two against either of those teams. Like,
yeah,
if they make it all the way to the playoffs, like, you know, they have, to be clear, they have absolutely zero chance of advancing, but I'm just, you know, they are a frisky team, friskier
if
than
they did. The podcast for. Ends. We will forfeit our, we'll burn our mics and everything all together.
I'll eat my hat, you know, all those things.
Yes.
They are on an upward trajectory. They've been great. And again, yeah, it's been this very sort of free flowing, a lot of attacking by Coby White, and then, you know, kicking it out, getting threes for guys. They've got Kevin Huerter now, you know, in that trade, you know, from Sacramento.
Good guy to have there.
Yeah, yeah. Just again, more shooting, more size. Defense still not their strong suit, really. Yeah, you know, when it gets down to it. But again, Pat Williams, I think he's been playing better. Like, he's been a guy who's like, okay, what's he going to be? Is he really worth sort of, you know, the money and the investment that they put in? He's a decent defender. He can shoot it from outside as well. I've actually been somewhat impressed with him this year. So, you know, they've got a frisky team that's going to give some people problems. But 100%, you're looking at it, and Josh Giddey, like that was a perfect encapsulation of what he can bring to your team in those last you know, few plays there. Not just the half court heave, which again, that's symbolic of him actually developing a pretty decent outside shot. Like, he was, what was he in that game overall from three? Everyone bear with me here. I think he was like 4 for 9.
Come on, stats department.
Yeah, Alex, can we get this up?
Big dog, ball talk monkey. Come on.
Roof, roof, roof. There he is. Yeah, 4 for 9 from three, and 8 for 19 overall. Like, he was early on in his career, it was like, okay, you know, he's the slob wizard, makes a lot of great passes, especially the sideline out of bounds, and you know, is kind of crafty, can get to the rim a little bit, but never thought of as like a great shooter. If you watch him in the Olympics last summer and then FIBA World Cup before that, when he plays internationally, he plays on that team like a number one option, shooting off the dribble from three, getting to the rim. So all that experience, I think, is finally translating to his NBA game. And if he can hit at a 4 for 9 clip from three, like, or, you know, and is, you know, from here on out in his career, like an approaching 40% from three type player, that's just, you know, such that's what you need, a guy with that kind of size. And the fact that he did make that defensive play, stole that inbounds from LeBron and then kicked it out to Coby White. Like, it's the passing, it's the feel for the game, it's sort of the instincts, plus that, like, number one scorer type, you know, ceiling. Like, I don't know if he'll ever quite get there, but with all the other things that he does, and just sort of getting more experience, you know, and getting a little bit older and not always being picked on defensively, like it was with the Thunder, like, you've got a decent player. I agree with you that he could maybe make an all-star game here down the line. And you know, this game, you know, comes after the Bulls beat the Lakers, blew the doors off them, in LA, not too long ago, last week sometime. And so, like, yeah, Giddey, this has been a really fun season to sort of see what he can be. And it's also, like, while we're on the topic of him, it's so, like, interesting how these things play out, because, like, I think we were both on the record saying the Giddey Caruso trade was kind of good for both sides. It made sense. Mm-hmm. I still think that's true, but you look at the Thunder now and how they're, you know, a number one seed, 60 win team. They might well win the chip. Like, I give them as much of a chance as anyone to go and do that. But for people who are criticizing them, what do they say? It's like, well, there's a lot on SGA's shoulders, like, to sort of be the playmaker. It would be great maybe if they had one more kind of creative scorer who could go get their own bucket or make things happen for others. And it's like, well, that is Josh Giddey. So you did give that up. And I understand you gave that up for a more sort of quote unquote Thunder type player in Caruso, who is, you know, one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. But, like, you know, you can make the argument the Thunder kind of had enough.
Well, they got like 6 or 7 guys like that this season.
Exactly. So it's like, Is it really going to turn out that, like, depending on how the season goes for the Thunder, if they don't make it to the finals slash if they don't win the NBA championship, you could maybe make the argument that they would have been better off having Josh Giddey on that team. Because I know that Josh Giddey, I know in the playoffs last year he got picked on and basically was unplayable. But it's like this version of him, I think, would get minutes for the Thunder. And you could cover up his deficiencies with the other great defenders that you have, like the Cason Wallace's, like Lou Dort, obviously. Like, so this is a very interesting development in sort of the Josh Giddey career timeline. But 100%, this was a great move by the Bulls to sort of identify him. And then going forward, sort of see what you have, because that was the other thing I kind of liked about it too, is that, maybe if you thought about a player like Josh Giddey, who's like a ball handler, plays well with the ball in his hands, maybe he doesn't work that well next to Coby White. I think this year him and Coby White have played great together. And Josh Giddey as a player has shown that, like you said, if he can play 1 through 3, he can play point guard. He can play a little bit of shooting guard, especially if you're going to shoot it like this from three. And then he can play the sort of point forward role as well, with a guy like Coby White being the one coming off the screens, the pin down. So very versatile guy, a good player for the Bulls to have going forward. And we'll see how frisky they can ultimately be here when the play-in rolls around.
Well, we'll keep an eye on the Bulls, and it would be exciting to see the Bulls, just be back in the playoff mix. It's always nice to see. Oh, yeah. I mean, again, since the MJ years, like we had a couple of years there with Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, Joakim Noah, Carlos Boozer. Since then, hasn't been all that much. I mean, DeRozan and Levine and Vucevic gave us a little bit of a run there at one point, but that didn't really pan out to anything memorable, except for, getting absolutely fucking destroyed by the Bucks. That wasn't the only madness, the only craziness that happened on Wednesday night. The Indiana Pacers
Thursday night
bullying. Thursday night. This week has just been a shit show of a week, man. The first 2 days felt like a million hours, and the rest of it went by very quickly. So I don't know, man. This is being in your mid-20s. But Thursday night, thank you to the little pup Jordan for correcting me on that one. 53-point victory for the Pacers as they bullied the Wizards on their home court. I mean, it's been obviously a horrible, 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 horrible season for the Wizards. 16 wins, worst record in the NBA. I just want to say, like, the lowest point of this ultimately, like, all-time bad season has to be their home crowd was booing the Pacers for holding on to the ball with 162 points scored against them because they were not going to keep scoring on their team. Yep. If I was a player for that organization, I think I would just rip my jersey off. I'm not fucking playing for you guys. I'd double bird the crowd, man. I'm not fucking playing for that. Are you kidding me?
You're double bird Mia Khalifa?
Yes. If that's what they're calling it these days. I just don't understand how you can have any dignity for your fan base or your team as a whole if you are essentially cheering on another team to just pummel you into oblivion, even into the last minute of a quarter. Like, the fact that there was even fans in the stands there, is a testament to what this culture has become. But I believe it was 9 different players for the Pacers in double digits in this one. Just a fucking a blowout of grand proportions. One of the highest scoring individual team performances we've seen in years. And the Pacers look as good as ever. But I mean, don't take too much from this one because the Wizards are just that bad.
Yeah. I'd say definitely more of a Wizard story. It's crazy you're talking about the booing at the end. At the beginning of this game, I don't remember hearing that many arenas as quiet as that. Like, you could hear everything. Yeah. You could hear the squeaky shoes. You could hear everything. All the guys were yelling. When the Wizards would score, like, all I would hear was that the announcer sort of announcing, who made the bucket. There was no discernible cheering at all. God, you got to feel bad for Washington. I mean, I'm just reminded right now of those stories after the trade deadline, or those reports that the Wizards were thinking of reuniting with Bradley Beal. I don't know who's running this organization or what's going on, but this is getting out of hand. I think, because also I thought the point of going and getting Chris Middleton and motherfucking Marcus Smart was you didn't want to be blown out like this anymore. Like everyone, yes. Like you were like, okay, we get it. We're obviously tanking again. We're one of the worst teams in the NBA, but we don't want to be embarrassed anymore. So we're going to bring in a few vets to sort of
Forget Malcolm Brogdon.
How could I forget?
And Smart didn't play this game, but still, they were around. Yeah.
But like, clearly that's not fucking working out. And you know, Jordan Poole is just over here, putting up his 18 points. You know, Alex Saar had a decent game. It's so sad what's happening. And I just don't even care where the ping pong balls fall and who they get in the lottery ultimately, because I think they're just going to fuck that up. And that player is going to not even develop well and end up either leaving or just not panning out. Cause I just have no faith in, the Washington ecosystem at all. I mean, mm-hmm. even a guy like Alex Saar, why does Alex Saar basically, you know, only shoot threes? Like he loves being out there on the perimeter when he's 7 feet tall and could actually, maybe develop a little bit of an interior game. No one's really, apparently telling him to do that. He's just, all these guys have just free reign to do whatever the fuck they want. It's been mm-hmm. like this in Washington for a number of years. And, so yeah, I don't even know what else to say. The Pacers side of it, yeah, it's just, you know, to be fair, they are a good team. They've looked really good.
Yeah, Tyrese Haliburton might get an All-NBA nod this season. I don't know, no All-Star, but he's been awesome the second half of the year.
Well, we've been talking about how weird his shot has looked since he came back from that injury last year. 7 for 10 from three and a few really deep ones. Now, I get it, it's the Wizards, so you're basically playing like for fun in an empty gym. Yes. But still, the fact that he looks like that at all bodes really well for the playoffs. And this is the night after, this is the second night of a back-to-back for the Pacers when they lost to the Lakers on that LeBron tip in there at the end.
Yes.
So, you know, it's crazy that they did this on a second night of a back-to-back, but they do look good. And, you know, they've got Nembhard and Nesmith back, who are their defensive sort of presences in that starting lineup. And I really, really actually like, you know, all things considered with how sort of shaky the Knicks have looked this year, with we just talked about how bad Milwaukee has been, the Haliburton, Nesmith, Nembhard, Siakam, and Turner starting five is really solid. Like that is a mm-hmm. solid group that has some experience from last year. Obviously, got to the conference finals. Like I know earlier, you know, at the start of the season, you and I both weren't that high on the Pacers going into the playoffs. But all things considered, like they're one of the more you could make the argument they're the scariest team outside of that top two, depending on how you feel about the Knicks. So, you know, we'll see, but they're definitely peaking at the right time, kind of like the Bulls, but you know, a little higher up the standings. Having all their guys back. If Haliburton can look more like this guy, which to be honest, he didn't even look like for most of the playoffs last year, even though they got far, like the Pacers, they might have to reevaluate their ceiling because they've got a pretty scary bench as well, with McConnell coming in and running things, Ben Mathurin, Obi Toppin.
Walker has started to come on.
Pacers.
Yeah, 100%. You know, they got to the conference finals last year, and I think this team is better than they were at this point last year. 100%. So, they've got, I think I'm pretty close to putting the official dark horse tag on the Pacers.
Yep.
I think maybe one more good win, or a couple good performances from Haliburton, Siakam. I think I'd be ready to do it. I might even feel comfortable doing it right now, but I'm not going to.
I don't want to
jump the gun. Been burned by that before.
Oh, you know what, Matt? Their next game, they play the Thunder. So that'll be the litmus
that's
test.
That'll be a good one.
See how they look against them.
It'd be awesome if the NBA ever marketed any kind of marquee matchup like this.
They just want you to download the NBA app, okay?
Yeah.
Download the NBA app for behind the scenes things of fucking God knows what. Adam, idiot.
And also,
expanding overseas in Europe.
That would be fucking stupid. The biggest thing that the NBA wants you to talk about is who'd win in a fight, LeBron James or Stephen A. Smith. The craziest beef that we've seen in years, and it's the most unnecessary beef we've probably seen in years. It's just, for anyone who hasn't seen it, obviously, personality, Stephen A. Smith, who has just kind of become a bona fide meme, rage baiting, guy who sits on a screen and yells, talks about how horny he is sometimes, which is funny. I did like when he called Charmander, he called him Charminder and Bulbasaur.
And he called Ratatouille.
Yes, that's my favorite one. Yeah, that's goated. I bet you didn't know that. I bet you didn't know any Ratatouille. He's from the streets. He would beat Stuart Little. Yeah. Horrible analyst at this point when it comes to Sirk basketball, but he is funny. But yeah, for anyone who's missed it, essentially he had been making comments about how Bronny James is a Nepo baby. 110% fucking true. But LeBron took exception
LeBron's
for it.
LeBron's coming after you, man. Next time he sees you.
LeBron confronts
LeBron, I don't
him.
Think so, man. I love you, LeBron. I kneel at your feet.
Third quarter. I would love that, man. I unlike what Stephen A says, but LeBron, third quarter of one of the recent home games, goes up to Stephen A courtside and gets in his face and walks away. Someone records it and posts it, and then it becomes a whole thing that LeBron was mad that Stephen A had said things about Bronny, and then Stephen A said that he stands by them, and then LeBron starts sharing memes on Instagram of Stephen A boxing, because Stephen A said that if LeBron had put his hands on him, then he would have swung on him immediately. Immediately, I would have swung on him. And then he says, I would have got my ass kicked, but I would have swung on him, which is a classic move. But all in all, like I just think this one is so weird. I guess also the part of this was that LeBron went on the Pat McAfee show and just kind of roasted every NBA media member he could name about what they say. You know, he roasted Windhorst as well. You know, it's just LeBron is at the point of his career. He just doesn't give a fuck. He's so tired of it. I mean, he's been dealing with it for 22 years. So, I mean, I don't really fault the guy at all. But it's just funny to me that now, obviously, it's his son. He's going to have a bit of a sore spot for him. But it's like, but yes, he's a fucking Nepo baby. Everyone knows it. Everyone has acknowledged it. Like, yes, he can play at the NBA level. Like, he's not horrible by any means.
He had 39 points the other day in the G League.
Yeah, like he's not a bad player, but like you can accept the fact that your team drafted him because you are on the team and you are LeBron James, not because he is a fucking good player. So all in all, just crazy that this is the reality that we live in, that the most talked about thing around the NBA and, you know, ESPN is reporting, is one of their fucking reporters is beefing with LeBron James. And this is why the NBA ratings are at an all-time low and why the game is dying and why more people need to be listening to Big Dog Ball Talk, as we bring the humor, we bring the fun, but we also bring some good analysis. So I'm just a little bit annoyed, a little bit perplexed, and all around just kind of disappointed and sad in the state of NBA media and the way that the Adam Silver era has just decided to market themselves, which is pretty much non-existent.
Yes. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's pretty crazy. It is entertaining, I suppose. Like, these guys are as much like almost like reality TV celebrities as they are like athletes and analysts at this point, which is funny. Also, have you seen Kevin Love? His like his online presence in these beefs? He's amazing. He actually deserves.
He also doesn't give a fuck anymore.
Oh my god, he does not at all. But like all whenever the Jimmy stuff was going on, like between him and Pat Riley, you know, he was chiming in with memes and stuff, and you know, because Kendrick Perkins also said some stuff recently about LeBron as well, and
he said that he blocked his phone number. LeBron's probably devastated. So he doesn't get why he didn't want him or Richard Jefferson to co-host the podcast and not Steve Nash.
Yes.
I don't know, Perk. Why do you think he wanted Steve Nash instead of fucking Richard Jefferson? Why don't you tell me?
I can't believe Kendrick Perkins is actually a paid analyst. Like he's the best, but
he is like he has worse takes than Shaq, who probably has the worst takes of any NBA analyst, and it's like you're 10 years younger, but you seem like you're just like a carb. You could be his younger brother or something, or you could be his older brother. You look like you're fucking 70 years old. Yeah, and I don't know how he got the job.
Well, he's funny. This is about being correct. This is about being like memeable, which is the world we're in, I guess. But
where's Channing Frye? He was good.
he was pretty good. But yeah, it's I'm curious to know where this is going to go, if it's going to go anywhere, because it's crazy that Stephen A has such a big head that he thinks he can keep like responding, or like that he's on LeBron's level in some way. Like
15
minutes crazy to
segment.
Me. Yeah. It's just, it's wild the way he's acting right now. But you know, I'm assuming this will die down and you know, we'll forget about it. But Stephen A, he said something about like, I was here when LeBron came into the league in 2023 or 2003, and I'll be here after he leaves. And I actually think it's the opposite. We're going to talk about LeBron and think about him for a long time. Stephen A, you are sort of you're there, but on the sidelines. I'm sorry to say, but you know, I also kind of get both sides, though, if we're talking about this as like as an actual beef. Like, I understand if you're LeBron, you're going to take issue about anyone sort of disparaging your son, if that's how you feel like, you know, what's been happening. But I haven't heard Stephen A. say anything that I feel like is way out of line. Like, he's not of guy. Like, Stephen A. will make jokes and like kind of be self-deprecating sometimes, but I don't think he really crosses any lines most of the time. So
as long as you're not Jamarcus Russell or Kwame Brown.
Yes, yes. Sorry, I don't know, I forget about Kwame. But you know, aside from that,
Lamar Odom, kind of, who was on crack
a little bit.
But that was like when he was really he had to really make a name for himself with those rants.
But also, I mean, that was true. That wasn't a lie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Was on crack. You know, stay.
It wasn't even it wasn't even an insult to him necessarily.
No. It was just stating a fact. he didn't put forward a position on that one. But it's. It's crazy. This is what my dad would call a tempest in a teapot, ultimately, but still fun to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. And the last two things I'll say about this matter, I guess. One, Stephen A. also want to point out, people have been sharing it as well, did actually say before the draft, like well before the draft last season, that Bronny deserves to be in the NBA and that he's got NBA talent, that he's seen him play and is a legitimate talent. So he was actually earlier on backing him, and I think has now kind of rescinded it just because it's, you know, he's going to get more clicks this way. He got more clicks by saying that Bronny was an NBA talent. It's just, he doesn't get nothing. He says nothing. And 90% of any analysts you see on ESPN, especially, they don't actually fucking mean any of that. They just say shit for the views. They don't actually have any kind of heart in their takes. Unlike here, it's all heart.
It's all fucking heart.
Yeah. And the other thing I got to say, that was just like, I wouldn't say it crossed a line, but it was very close to being across the line issue when he said that he was like, oh, I didn't see you at Kobe's funeral. Where were you, man? Talk about selfish. And it's like,
that's very
weird. And especially when it's like very clear that LeBron was there. Like Diana Taurasi, she had the quote, like she literally pointed out LeBron at one point. And it's also like was immediately fact checked that he had just said he did not want to be on the broadcast. Like, it's just crazy to me that this is, you know, he doesn't try to like do any studying or anything. It's just not real journalism. It's all gotcha shit. It's all clickbait. No. It's bad.
Yeah. Even like, you know, when, cause I guess it hasn't happened officially, but like, cause he's going to be on, Stephen A is going to be on more with like the inside crew, right? Cause they're kind of merging or like, what, like with Shaq and Kenny and everybody, like, is that what's the status of that? Are they is that ESPN taking that over?
Or I don't know, man, because they were supposed to be done this year and then they weren't, but then they still are. I don't know. And it's like, who cares? Because it also seems like a lot of people are done with inside the NBA and the like Charles and Shaq's takes for at least the majority of it. Like, and I mean, fair, because their takes, actually, when they're talking about basketball, are bad. They are funny. They are good personalities, but their takes on basketball are generally bad, especially Shaq.
Yes, yes. But basically, like, when Stephen A. is put next to, like, you know, other guys he's not used to, like, even, like, Stephen A. and Shannon, which is more sort of a recent pairing, like, through this year. It's like, and Shannon's also ridiculous, but, like, Stephen A. is good, like, when he's on his own and can talk to the camera and, like, do his whole shtick. But when he has to, like, converse with other people and have a real conversation about, like, what's going on a basketball court, like, it's never really that, like, insightful or, like, interesting or, like, because, like, there's certain guys who are really good at that who kind of work as part of a team. I will say that's what's good about Inside is that, like, they know how to work off each other and make jokes. And, you know, there's some basketball analysis in there. But, yeah, Stephen A., I think maybe there was a time when he knew more what he was talking about on the court things. But now, like, even his hot takes are, like, usually pretty obvious shit. I'm like, are you even watching these games? Or are you just sort of hanging out here every night? Like, it's very strange. But you know what? He's the ESPN darling, I guess. This is what they did. Like, ESPN has put all the money that they used to put into guys like Zach Lowe, who would break down the game at like an insane sort of you know, micro level, and push
Kellerman.
It more towards Max Gelman and pushed it more towards you know, the Stephen A. types. Is that good or bad? I don't know. Depends sort of why you're watching these shows and why you're watching sports, but it is a little jarring, I think, for guys like us.
Last thing I'll say on it, somewhere in the Dallas, Texas area. There's a piece of drywall with 1,000 holes punched in it because Skip Bayless cannot believe that Stephen yes. A. stole his fucking dream from him lifetime. It's just crazy to me. And he still tried to get in on it. LeBron is never going to acknowledge you, Skip. It's over. Just give up.
No, no.
But
I do love Skip, though.
It's funny.
I love to hate him, but I love him all the same.
The last segment we're going to talk about here, and it's a quick one. It's a new segment. It's called Defending Home Court, where me and Jordan defend the Toronto Raptors and the city of Toronto, even though none of us live there anymore. That's
true.
Not
this is weird.
But we same still Roberts. Will. It's a weird one. It just has come out. Quite a few different podcasts and interviews with former Toronto Raptors players have come down now where they talk about their, just kind of displeasure playing for the Raptors, playing in Toronto. It started here with Thaddeus Young, who was just recently on the Raptors in the past couple seasons, and then has now trickled down to Lou Williams, Charlie Villanueva, as well as a few others. But it's
Rudy Gay talked about it.
Rudy Gay was one of the first as well, which...
Fuck you, Rudy.
Fuck, not Rudy Gay. Not this fucking guy.
It's Rudy Gay, man.
I don't know why he thought that, after that video came out, that we would want him here. But yeah, it's an interesting situation. First off, go fuck yourself if you guys had anything bad to say. But Thad Young was just, his was so vague and just, this classic American player. It's just so different. It's just a culture shock. It's just different. Toronto is not that different from a major, eastern city, northeast city in the United States. Not that different. Maybe a little more diverse, different cultures. Don't know why that would be an issue for you. But the only thing you can really pinpoint, I swear to God. Then the biggest issues that you hear from some of these other guys, like Charlie Villanueva said it, but he said it because he came in as a rookie. He thought it was cool. He didn't really have any problems with it. But Lou Williams, who, again, was only there for one season. Thad Young was there for 3 seasons, maybe. I don't even know if it was a full 3 seasons. It might have been like 2.5. Rudy Gay there for 1.5 years, before he was traded away, which then sparked the Raptors being good. So shout out to you, Rudy.
Thank you, Rudy.
Sour. It's all these guys who were never there that long that are making these complaints. And their biggest complaint is they didn't like the culture of the city, which still don't get what that means. And then the other side of it was I could get the weather part of it. The winter kind of sucks.
Sure.
They never said that. But then the other biggest part was that they didn't like going through customs. So I don't really understand
anything.
Yeah. I don't know why that's the biggest issue. You have to go through customs 41 times. All you have to do is show your fucking passport. What is such an issue about that?
I know. And I can't imagine, like you said, we talked about this off camera briefly. I can't imagine that it's this exact same as me. You have priority, you go through one at a time.
Oh, yeah.
You're waiting in fucking lines.
You're on a private team jet.
Yes. So I can't imagine it takes that long. 10 minutes.
And even
minutes?
Then, they probably hand all their shit. They give it to a team manager or something,
exactly.
And they're the ones handling it.
Exactly. It's not, you don't have a big ass suitcase with all your shit. I don't understand, because that is the thing that I hear more than anything else, more than the culture, more than the weather, more than anything. Even opposing players, I remember that when fucking goddamn asshole Paul Pierce was on the Wizards, they were playing the Raptors, and he said something, leaving after they won that series, talking about, I don't have to go through customs anymore or anything. And I'm Jesus Christ, is it really that much of an inconvenience for you guys to go through customs? We've both fucking flown commercially, even that going through customs, that's not that much of a fucking hard issue. You scan your passport, you have someone you got to just talk to. It's crazy to me. I guess if you're used to flying just within the US where you literally, it's like a bus, you just get on, get off, it would be a little bit different. But I just don't get how that's such a big deal. It's true. It's a good point. It's a lot of these guys who aren't there for very long. You ask or you hear Kyle Lowry or DeMar DeRozan or any of these guys, Pascal,
Vince Carter,
even Vince never really had bad things to say about the city per se. It was more with the organization that he had an issue with, all these Amir Johnson, all these long tenured guys, you don't hear that from them. I get that, if they didn't like it, they probably or maybe wouldn't have stayed there that long. But it's I think it. Maybe it depends on who you are. If you're not really as much of a well-traveled / open-minded person, you're going to see all these differences. But it's true. I would think if you're coming from, the northeastern United States, New York, Baltimore fucking area, all that stuff. If you're coming from there, Philly, whatever, Boston, and you're going to Toronto, I actually feel like that might be less culture shock than if you were to like go to Texas. Like,
oh yeah,
that would be like 100%. like a completely different thing. Whereas like Toronto's pretty closely related to those cities. Like again, there's a slightly different Canadian culture. It's going to be colder. Yeah. And you know, there's, you know, yeah, more multicultural, sort of less Americanized media and things like that. But again, it's not that different. And there's, you know, not to toot Toronto's horn too much, but like there's a lot to fucking do. And the multiculturalism is what makes it cool. Like there's a lot of different experiences you can have, like from the food scene to, you know, what type of, you know, events are going on, like the festivals and everything. Like, it's,
they just need to all be there for Caravana, but unfortunately,
well, that's the problem. They're not there in the warmer months, which is, you know, very few players. And I will point out to the people who, hate on Vince Carter still. Vince Carter came back in the summer and did camps and did things. And the players that do that, I would imagine have even nicer sort of experiences. So yeah, fuck all these guys, for not giving Toronto enough of a chance, because, I mean, overall too, if you feel like you want like a big city life, Toronto is the, after LA and New York, the biggest market. And it's about Chicago size, but I think technically bigger in the last few years of all of the NBA. So if you want like a, you know, that sort of experience, you're going to get that in Toronto. And yeah, guys, just don't give them enough of a chance. Like I've never been to the US and thought, oh my God, culture shock. This is so much different. Like I'm not going to fucking Japan, man. We're pretty much the same.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll never actually be the same, though. Not to get political.
My God.
But yeah, this is a very weird one. If again, if you're going to complain about anything, complain about the fucking income tax. I complain about that, too.
That true, yes.
That would piss me off if I was a professional athlete. But tax man cometh for all of us. Do your taxes, everybody.
And you get to use your U.S. dollars to pay for Canadian groceries and Canadian dollars. That saves you some money.
But yes, let us know what you guys think of living in Toronto, being in Toronto. Athletes in Toronto, let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk, Instagram, X, TikTok, Facebook for all you old heads out there. Give us a follow. Stay up to date with the podcast. Help us. Help you. Help you. Also, let us know who you think would win in a fight between LeBron James, Stephen A. Smith, as well as your takes here on the Indiana Pacers. Are they a dark horse? Are they not? Taylor Jenkins, did he sleep with the owner's wife or not? lots to talk about here. Lots to break down. We'll be back on Monday. But until then, this has been Big Dog Ball Talk. Matt Eckhart, Jordan Flegel, and as my good friend Jordan always says,
I just want to be inclusive as well. Maybe Taylor Jenkins just slept with the owner himself.
Yes, maybe.
And it's just bad awkward. Breakup. And he's like, look, we can't do this anymore. I can't see you every day. So anyway. We'll
separation was actually just straight up like a breakup announcement.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting.
But I shout out to handyman out there, you know, around the globe, Matt.
Thank you.
I don't know if I would. No, I wouldn't count you in that. I wouldn't count me in that. But I tried the other day. I installed a fan above my stove because this apartment didn't come with one. You know, you've got the little hood vent or whatever. Did that with the help of Lloyd David, who held it up there for me.
But, LD.
I'm becoming more handy as I age. Maybe when you get to my age, you will see.
Hey man, I've been known to be handy well before I ever met you. So,
sure.